The Guardian.
Hey, it's Lee Alexander, and before you get started with this episode of Chips with Everything, we wanted to point you in the direction of our sponsor, Squarespace. For everything you need to set your website apart, head to squarespace.com/guardian to get 10% off your first purchase. And now here's the show.
So Siri, what did you have for breakfast today?
I had my regular thing. I had coffee and a Quest bar.
How's the weather outside?
Well, take a look out the window.
I have a friend. And the absurd thing is she's actually an operating system. Charles left her behind, but she's totally amazing. You know, she's so smart. She doesn't just see things in black or white. She sees this whole gray area, and she's helping me explore it. And we just bonded really quickly.
Imagine this. You wake up to what seems like a typical autumn morning. You make your morning cup of coffee, read the paper, run through your normal morning routine.
I'm weird. That's weird, right? That I'm bonding with an OS. No, it's okay. It's weird.
Well, I don't think so.
And then you open up your computer to check your emails and see that you have a message waiting for you from a friend of yours. And the message reads, "Hey, you know that new Apple phone that was released this morning? The iPhone 4S, I think it's called? The one with a virtual voice assistant called Siri? It kind of sounds like you. Is it you?"
Actually, the woman that I've been seeing, Samantha, I didn't tell you, but she's an OS.
You're dating an OS? What is that like?
It's great, actually.
And just when you thought it would be a typical autumn morning, you quickly realize that it's become anything but that, and your life will never truly be the same. Meet Susan Bennett.
Okay. Hi, I'm Susan Bennett. I am a singer, voice actor, and the original voice of Siri.
On October 4th, 2011, that far from typical autumn morning was Susan's reality. And on today's show, I'll chat to her about how the experience unfolded, her thoughts on the future of technology, AI, and machine learning, and of course, what it's like being the original voice of Siri. Tell me a bit about your background. How did you actually get into voice acting and singing, for that matter?
Well, actually, I started singing in high school, but I started playing the piano when I was a very little kid, like around four years old, and didn't really get into singing until much later. And then I started doing, you know, musical theater in high school and college, and got into a jazz band and started singing there. And when I moved to Atlanta, Georgia, I ended up doing a lot of studio work. They used to do a lot of jingles, or recording of jingles for radio and TV commercials, which I did a lot of. And we did enough of it that it was actually a career. And one day, the voice actor didn't show up to read the copy for the spot. And the studio owner said, "Susan, you don't have an accent. Come and read this for me." And so I did. And I did it quite easily. And so I ended up getting a voice coach and then a talent agent, and I've been doing voiceovers ever since. And that was decades ago.
Fantastic. Are there any jingles that you did that, you know, people might recognize, or were they quite
under
the radar?
Oh, no, not at this time. No, that was many, many years ago. Yeah.
Okay, great. And I mean, I've done a bit of research on you, and I've watched your TED Talk and all that, and it's quite a story. So if you wouldn't mind walking me through how your voice ended up becoming, I mean, what's truly one of the most iconic voices of the 21st century, one of the most well-recognized voices that people will hear on a day-to-day basis?
Well, to tell you the truth, I don't really know. I have some guesses. In 2005, I was working with a company that does a lot of phone messaging, and they came up with these new scripts for a company called Nuance. It was called ScanSoft at the time. And the scripts were very, very tedious. They were hundreds and hundreds of sentences and phrases that had been created to get all of the sound combinations in the language. And I've talked to other original series, and we all had the same experience. We thought we were doing more phone-type messaging recording for a phone system. And I guess technically, you could consider Siri a type of phone system. But when we were doing the recordings, it was sort of before the big techie push. You know, certainly the technological people were working on this project, you know, behind the scenes for a really long time. But those of us doing the actual reading and creating of the voice, we didn't really know what we were doing. We read hundreds of phrases and sentences, and afterwards technicians and computers went in and extracted sounds, put them back together and reformed new phrases and sentences. And these are what became Siri's answers, Alexa's answers, you know, all of the digital voice answers that you hear on all our different devices. And at the time that we were recording, we didn't really know what we were doing, but we did know that in that capacity, our voices were still pretty anonymous. Because when people are listening to this type of voice, they're not really listening to the voice. They're listening for information. You know, when you call and try to get information, try to get directions or something, or from your GPS, you're not really paying that much attention to the actual voice. You're just paying attention to the information. But suddenly, 6 years after these recordings were done, suddenly we were all the original voices of the iPhone. And we became more of a persona than an anonymous voice actor. And that really changed a lot of our lives.
So just to be clear, when you're actually doing the recordings, you're doing in the recording process, you're piecing together disjointed series of syllables. You're not saying any full words. Is that
yes.
right?
Yes. We did say, we would say sentences that really didn't make any sense, like Fossa, ask Fossa, ask Fossi. Say the shrouding again, say the shrading again, say the shreading again, say the shriding again. Everything had to be read in the same tone, at the same pacing, the same pitch, so that they could go in and extract the sounds and have them be fairly consistent. Sometimes we did not read just individual words. We read whole phrases and sentences. And as I worked for a whole month, 4 hours a day, 5 days a week, in 2005, July 2005. And then I did 4 months of updates in 2011 and 12. And then just a couple of years ago, they asked me to, you know, to put me under contract for another 5 years. And I just did not want to do any more of that work. It's very, very, very tedious, very tough on the vocal cords. And so I decided that, you know, I wanted to try to pursue some things that were a little more creative.
Right. And this time around, was it directly with Apple or was it through an agency again?
It's never been through Apple. Apple has never talked about the original series or the replacement series. They've never acknowledged any of that. But our understanding is that they changed all of the original Siri voices with the system OS 7. And I think that began with the last 5 phone. I think it was the 5S or the first number 6. They changed all of the original Siri voices because we did not have non-disclosure agreements with Apple. And Apple is very famously secretive about their business, and they didn't want any of us promoting who we were. And so now you'll probably never know who the Siri is on the iPhone 6.
Right. I mean, it's pretty clear just through the tenor in your voice and the cadence that you are the original Siri. But in theory, you know, sort of by that standard, since Apple hasn't acknowledged it, obviously, just by talking to you, you are Siri's voice. How does it make you feel that because Apple hasn't formally acknowledged that it is you, that other people could claim that they were the original Siri?
Well, first of all, it was proved that my voice is the original because when I first revealed myself, I talked to CNN, and they wouldn't put the story on the air until they had figured out exactly, you know, if I were the actual original voice. And they hired a forensic audiologist who said, yes, 100%, she is the voice. So the proof was there. As far as my feeling about it, first of all, I don't even know if Apple chose my voice because, surprisingly, most people will find this surprising, Apple did not create Siri. She was created by 3 engineers, Adam Chayer, Tom Gruber, and a man from Norway named Dag Kidlof. And I met another man the other day who says that he was also involved. So it was a big team of people that actually worked on the technology. And so I really don't know who chose the voice. No one has said. And so I don't know if it was the creators or if they chose the voice once it got to Apple. or if even Steve Jobs himself chose the original voice, because I know he was very involved in the development of Siri.
So I can only imagine how surreal it was when you woke up on October 4th, 2011, only to discover that your voice was being heard by millions and millions of people. How did that make you feel? And I guess, how did you find out in the first place?
Well, a fellow voice actor emailed me and said, "Hey, we're playing around with this new iPhone. Isn't this you?" And I was shocked and horrified and went on the website and discovered, yep, that was me. And to tell you the truth, I wasn't that happy about it. On the one hand, I was very flattered that my voice had been chosen. I mean, there are only about a billion voice actors in the world, and my voice had been chosen. So that was very flattering. But the fact that it had been chosen and it was on millions and millions of devices and I didn't know about it, the underlying thought there is, well, wait a minute, who got paid? It wasn't me.
And how quickly did you run out and buy your own iPhone 4S, if at all?
Well, I didn't run right out and get it, but my husband did, because I had just recently bought an iPhone 4, and I wasn't going to run out and buy, you know, just to get the Siri. So, but my husband did, because he was in the market for one anyway.
Great, Susan. I think now would be a pretty good time for a quick break. Are you happy to stick around for a couple more minutes afterwards?
Absolutely. I'm here.
Hey, this is Jason Phipps here, head of audio here at The Guardian. This episode of Chips with Everything that you are enjoying, no doubt, is sponsored by Squarespace. To find out more about how to set your website apart, head to squarespace.com/guardian.
If you're enjoying this Guardian podcast, I'd like to point you in the direction of another great show that we produce in-house here called The Guardian Books Podcast. This week's episode features an interview with author Alex Weedle about his children's fiction novel, Crompton Nights.
My heart started to pound again, and not just because I wasn't exactly in gold medal shape. This was proper scary now. When we reached the second floor, Bits stopped. "Everyone good?" he asked. Me and Jonah nodded yes, but what we both meant was, "Are you crazy? Of course not."
Again, that's The Guardian's Books Podcast. Search for it on iTunes or on your favorite podcasting app on your phone. Anecdotally, how often does it happen where you walk into a coffee shop or you walk into a restaurant and you're placing an order and the person you're chatting to does a double take and raises their eyebrows and says, "Do I know you from somewhere? I think I've heard your voice before." Does that happen frequently at all?
It's happened once in 5 years.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, people, first of all, my speaking voice is up here, and Siri is more down here. And also, it's out of context. People don't expect to hear it. They don't expect to hear it any place but their phone. And so consequently, and most people aren't paying that much attention to other people, sadly. There was one time I went into the bank, and I was talking to one of the bank managers about my account, and he said, "Boy, your voice sounds familiar." And I said, "Really?" He said, "We just got an iPhone. Isn't that, boy, that sounds like you." And I said, "You don't need to be in the banking business. You need to be in the audio business someplace because you've got great ears."
And I guess that's sort of been a blessing in disguise because, it would have caused a whole lot of problems if your voice was recognized a few dozen times per day.
Oh, absolutely. It's not problematic at all as far as my becoming sort of, notorious. But, I don't get, bothered by people. If I go to do any Siri appearances or do a Siri speaking event, and people come up, they're just thrilled to have me go, "Hi, nice to meet you. Hello, what can I do for you?" people are just amazed at the different sound of the voice. So.
Right. Siri, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure it was this first, bit of voice that was built into technology that was, meant to actually sound human rather than...
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you think it's important for our technology to sort of share that human quality with us? Or do you think it's actually quite dangerous? Or what are your thoughts on that? And why do you think it was so successful in allowing people to relate to technology?
Well, I think it was successful mainly because it was the first. Siri was the first concatenated voice to sound human. Now, concatenated is that process I was referring to earlier where computers and technicians extract sounds and reform them into new sentences and phrases. And also they gave Siri a personality. You know, she was kind of a character, still is. And I think that the human aspect has always made our relationship to machines easier. For instance, back in the late 70s when they were introducing ATMs in the country, nobody would use the ATM. Now, this is going way back, probably farther than your audience can imagine, but pre-computers, at least pre-personal computers, you know, people didn't trust getting their money out of a machine, you know, going to the bank and having a machine, you know, give them the money. They wouldn't use the machine. And so all of these banks had installed ATMs in their banks and no one was using them. And so a brilliant little advertising agency in Atlanta called McDonald and Little decided, well, we'll make this machine have a persona. And they called her Tilly the All-Time Teller. Well, I became the jingle singer for Tilly. And then ultimately they hired an actress that looked like the visual that they had on the machine. And so they personalized the machine. The result was that the ATMs in Atlanta became the first successful ATMs in the country because, you know, this ad agency had personalized the machine. And I'm sure the same thing is true for, you know, any of our digital devices now. I mean, people still get a sense that they're relating somehow humanly, even though not really, because, you know, it's certainly not the same type of spontaneous thing that you would have with another human. You know, it's more of a controlled situation.
Yeah, but I think you're absolutely right. I mean, for instance, with the Apple Watch, I think when they promote it, they say it's not vibrating against your wrist, it's tapping you, like a human would tap you. Or, I mean, even Amazon calling their product Alexa and not calling it, you know, Robot 3000.
Right.
I think it's well on its way. You know, it's everything's becoming a bit more personable, a bit more human, easier to relate to. And I'm curious what your relationship with technology is actually like today. Has this experience left you feeling a little bit cynical, or do you actually use voice assistant technology on your phone?
I don't use it that often. I mean, I really appreciate what technology can do, especially in the voiceover business. It's pretty amazing that we can all control our own careers with the technology that's developed. The thing that worries me about technology like Siri and Alexa and other, you know, different digital voices like that, especially for kids, I think it's worrisome that kids can find any answer to any question just by talking to their phones. And I think that they bypass, you know, the original computer, you know, the brain, and they don't oftentimes learn how to resolve their own problems, how to resolve issues and solve their own problems. They don't go through that process that, you know, when I was a little kid, you know, you wanted to find out some information, you had to go to the damn library, or you had to open up your Encyclopedia Britannica. You had to go through a process of learning, and during that process, you would learn other things. Now, I suppose if you're a curious kid, you know, then Siri is just a wealth of knowledge, you know. But I fear that it's just the very simplistic stuff that people are using Siri for. And I'm just not so sure that it's a great thing for kids to be on their phones 24/7. I think they ought to just put them away for a few hours a day.
Right, and I guess kind of relaying back to the previous point, by humanizing our technology, it'll only perpetuate that to a further extent, I suppose.
Well, I think it's a very dangerous thing that we've got coming ahead with artificial intelligence, because it could be a pretty devastating thing for the human race. I mean, if you've got a machine that's smarter than humans, more efficient than humans, doesn't need to be fed,
<That's>
doesn't
a big one.
Drink water, isn't going to trash the environment, suddenly humans are looking pretty expendable.
Yeah. I think Elon Musk would agree with you.
Yes, he does agree, yeah. As well as Stephen Hawking.
And I think finally, this might be a slightly difficult one to answer, but, you know, what have you learned from this experience? And if you could change anything about how things have played out, would you?
Well, you know, I don't really like a question like that, because if I could, it is what it is. And so I've dealt with it. And it's actually been an incredibly fantastic life lesson for me. And I've been actually very grateful for it. It took me 2 whole years to reveal myself as Siri, because I'm a pretty private, rather introverted person. I can certainly rise to the occasion because I am a performer. I'm a singer and a musician, so I can rise to the occasion. But, you know, inherently I'm very much an introvert. And to all of a sudden be this voice of this device that was on just millions and millions and millions of people's phones and, you know, eventually iPads and things, it was crazy. I call it being accidentally famous. It was certainly not something that I aspired to. And so I really had to deal with it a lot psychologically and figure out what I was going to do about it, how I was going to use that information, and try to use it in a positive way. And finally, my husband and son just totally convinced me. They said, listen, I know you've been weighing the pros and cons of this for many, many, many months, but you're really missing out on a very unique opportunity. And I thought, you know, you're right. I just have to take this giant leap. And so I did, and it was, it's been very fulfilling. It's been very satisfying. I've started basically a whole new career based around it. I do Siri speaker events, in which I, you know, tell the story of how Siri, the recordings were done, and basically, you know, how the technology changed. Talk a lot about the voiceover industry, because so many people are interested in that. And talk about how technology basically revolutionized that business. It didn't just change it, it's just night and day. And then I also talk about how it affected me personally. And that was really a huge life lesson for me, a life lesson in acceptance. And, you know, okay, well, it should be this way, but it's not. It's this way. So now what are you going to do? And it's like, well, I guess I better forget about the should and work on what is. And even at my age, it was a huge, huge life lesson, and it was one that I needed to have.
That's all for this week's episode. A huge thanks to Susan Bennett for coming on and telling her story. If you liked the show, you can subscribe on iTunes or whatever podcasting app you use on your phone. Just search for Chips with Everything. I'm on Twitter as @MattShore, MattShore. And our regular host, Lee Alexander, that's @LeeAlexander. She'll be back in a couple of short weeks to take over hosting the show once again. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed the episode. We'll see you back here next week.
The Guardian has always been a community of readers, journalists, and contributors. And now our live events are bringing these people together.
The Guardian events are The Guardian at its best, which is a two-way conversation involving the reader and having a real, genuine, thriving debate.
Could be anything from food and culture, arts, to politics, to foreign affairs.
To see what events are coming up and to check out the benefits of membership, go to members.theguardian.com. Also, subscribe to the Guardian Live podcast. You can do so on iTunes, SoundCloud, and other reputable audio platforms.